Okay. Welcome to the Shiur on Aksav HaKabbalah Parshas Yisro. The pieces we're going to look at tonight relate to Matan Torah, which of course is the central aspect of the Parshas HaShavua. The first one we're going to start off with is an interesting interpretation of a pasuk by the whole story of Matan Torah. It's sort of a narrowly defined issue in terms of Matan Torah, but the idea that the Aksav HaKabbalah presents lends itself to the interpretation of many other words and aspects of Chumash itself. So in Perek Yutes, Pasuk Yudches, it says, Vahar Sinai Oshan Kulo. Har Sinai, the mountain of Sinai, was entirely smoked. It was smoky. B'bnei Asher Yorad Olav Hashem Bo'esh, because God had descended upon the mountain in fire. Vayal Ashono Ke'eshen HaKivshon. The smoke rose up like the smoke from a furnace. Vayecherad Kol Hahar Me'od. And the entire mountain trembled very much. So, on that last phrase, Vayecherad Kol Hahar, he writes, Sibas Rasha Oretz Heimruchos Ovim, Va'ashonim Nechnosi Bebetim Ha'adoma. Generally speaking, why does an earthquake happen? You know, in general natural terms. So he says that when vapors and smoke goes into the midst of the earth, Kasher Lo'yimsu Nekovim Mekomos Lotseis, and those vapors don't find anywhere to escape from the depths of the earth, Tirash ha'aretz b'mnei ha'ed ha'netzar shama. The vapor which is trapped in the earth and can't get out causes the earth itself to shake. I'm not sure how that works in terms of earthquakes, but that's what he says. Ava b'har Sinai lo hoya dover kein. This, however, was not the case when it came to Har Sinai. Ki hoya yotzei oshon v'ruach mitachas la'aretz. Rav ve'ov ke'oshon akivshon. As the Pasuk just said, there was so much smoke and so much vapor, which, as he portrays it, was escaping from the ground itself, so there was no natural need for the ground to quiver. Ve'im kol ha'yitziyah mufleges ha'hi, and notwithstanding all of this vapor escaping from the ground, charad kol ha'har me'od. Nonetheless, the mountain still trembled. In other words, those are the connections between the various phrases in the Pasuk. The first part of the Pasuk speaks about how Har Sinai Oshan Kulo, Har Sinai was very smoke-filled, which I think usually we picture that as sort of the smoke coming down from up on top, but the way he's describing it is that the smoke and the vapor is escaping through vents in the ground, through holes in the ground. You know, it's kind of like walking the streets of New York City at night and seeing the steam, you know, rising up from all of these manholes. So, Lahavdil, I guess, right? So, you know, here the smoke and the steam were escaping from the ground, and nonetheless, the mountain was trembling. And, you know, this showed that this was a supernatural event. That's the way the Mefarshim explained this pasuk. However, says the Aksav HaKabbalah, I'd like to give a different interpretation of this phrase, Vayecherad kol ha'har me'od, that the entire mountain trembled very much. Lule yirasi, were it not for the fact that I was afraid to say so, which is, you know, the Hebrew equivalent of the phrase lule demistafina, right, which if I wasn't afraid to say so, when rabbinic authors always want to say something new, and they don't want to say that they're saying something new. So they always say, if I wasn't afraid to say so, I would say the following. Right? Obviously, he wasn't that afraid to say it because he said it. Okay.
It's almost like saying,
right, exactly. But the car is sold. Right? As the old joke goes. Lule Yerosi, Hayisi Omer, She'in Charodo Zo Museves Lahahar Atzmo, Ki'im La'an She'im Maimud, Shayu Omdim Svivo Sahar. When it says Vayecherad Kol Hahar, says the Aksav HaKabbalah, I believe it's not speaking about that the physical mountain trembled, but rather it refers to the people gathered around the mountain. It's those people who were trembling, not the mountain itself. Umosif bozeh amasha omer mikodav ayecher ad kol ha'am asher b'machane. As the Pasuk says just two psukim earlier, all of the people who were gathered in the camp trembled at this awesome event that was about to take place. Here too, vayecher ad kol ha'har me'oh, doesn't mean the mountain trembled, it means the people trembled. So that's very nice of him to say, but what's the basis for saying that? What's the source for saying that? So he says as follows, v'zeh milas kol, the word kol, kof lamed, which everyone who knows even a little bit of Hebrew knows just means all, or, you know, the all the parts of something, everything. It also has a separate meaning. In yano hekefu sviva, kol also means all that which surrounds a certain area or a certain thing. Miloshen kolil. So, and he brings a number of words which many of them are familiar to us, certainly from the davening and other sources, where he relates all of these words back to kol, and he shows how they all share a common root. So take the word kolil. Kolil means a crown, right? To the extent to which we're familiar with that, we're familiar with it from the Shabbos morning davening. Kolil tiferes berosha nosata. You know, you Ribon Shalom, placed a crown of glory on Moshe Rabbeinu's head at Har Sinai. Shu keser va'atara. So why is a crown called a kolil? Al shem shehi makefes misaveves hazarosh. Because the crown surrounds the head. The crown goes around the head. So kolil, which is related to the word kol, both of them focus on the idea of surrounding something, going around something. And he says, the truth is, if you look, all of the words that we have in Hebrew that describe crown, there are a number of words in Hebrew that are used for crown, and they all are related to the notion of something going around or surrounding. So for instance, an atara, an ateres, right? To be oter means to surround something. The very word keser, he quotes a pasuk in Shoftim, which means to surround something. Nezer, or nezer, you know, goes all around. Right, so all the words in Hebrew, including kolil, which, you know, is related to the word kol, speak about that which goes around. For that reason as well, he writes, "Mizeh hunach al ho'arusa b'yom chuposa shem kala." That's why a bride is called a kala. Why is a bride called a kala? Lefishu bo b'yom himukefes u'misuveves b'tachshiten. On the day of her chasana, she is surrounded by jewels of all different sorts. She's surrounded by jewelry. So in other words, kala literally means the one who is surrounded. Right? Interesting. And then he writes as well, v'zeu shem klal hanemar bipratov. The very word klal, right? We say in the morning, klal uprat. Klal is a general principle. Why is klal referred to as klal? Because what is a general principle? It is an idea that surrounds and encompasses all of the details. The prat is a detail within the general principle. The general principle functions like a fence that surrounds and includes all of the pratim, all of the details. Right? And finally, one last manifestation of this idea of, you know, kol, meaning surrounding. The pasuk in Melachim, when Shlomo HaMelech dedicates the Beis HaMikdash, so he says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaShomayim u'shmei HaShomayim lo yichal kelucha. Right? The heavens themselves are not able to hold you. Lo yichal kelucha, the same Lashem. What's yichal kelucha? So he says, lo yuchlu lahakif oscha. Right? Even the heavens are not able to surround you, O HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They can't hold you. Literally, the Pasuk means, the heavens can't hold you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Va'af ki zeh habayis. And certainly this house which I built, says Shlomo HaMelech, is incapable, really, of housing HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I don't think that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to fit into the Beis HaMikdash. You know, that certainly doesn't make sense. But nonetheless, I built the Beis HaMikdash, you know, for the reasons that he outlines over there. So, Yichal Kalucha means that the heavens are not going to be able to surround you, to contain you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? He goes on to point out how there are other terms which we know in Hebrew, which all relate back to this idea of kol being a surrounding thing. A vessel in Hebrew is a kli, right? What's a kli? So a kli is something which surrounds that which is placed inside of it and therefore is able to hold it, right? So in other words, kohena v'kohena, as he goes through these various different words, we see that, you know, the root of all of them, this word kol, means the idea of surrounding something. And therefore he writes, so going back to our pasuk, v'tam kol ha'har, so in our pasuk it says, v'yecherad kol ha'har, so the normal interpretation is the entire mountain shook, right? But he wants to suggest, the Ksav HaKabbalah wants to suggest, v'yecherad kol ha'har can also be translated, that which was around the mountain trembled, that which was around the mountain shook, the kol, right, meaning that's which surrounded the har, v'yecherad, that trembled very, very much with the giving of the Torah at Har Sinai. What was around the mountain? The people, right? It was the people who were around the mountain shook. Truth be told, if you think about it, we'll see things that this interpretation of the Ksav HaKabbalah gives us that we wouldn't have necessarily understood on our own. But one advantage that the interpretation has is that without his interpretation, the truth is the word kol, in a certain sense, is really extraneous. Meaning, if the point is just to say, the mountain shook, v'yecherad ha'har me'od, what I have to say, kol ha'har, as opposed to what? You know, just the top of the mountain shook, the bottom of the mountain shook? The mountain shook. I mean, it's hard to imagine part of the mountain shaking and the entirety of the mountain not shaking. It's a little bit hard to imagine that. So once you say that, the word kol on a certain level really becomes extraneous if it just means the whole mountain shook. Rather, you know, the word kol means that which surrounds. That which surrounded the mountain shook on that day.
Yeah, but it says, v'yecherad kol, previous pasuk, v'yecherad kol ha'am.
Okay, so very good. So let's come back to that, Be'ez Hashem. Okay. So he says, makifei ha'har, those who stood around the mountain, ha'omdim svivav tachtov, who were all at the foot of the mountain around it, naflu b'charado v'shtomimus nifla'a. Right, they fell down with this tremendous trembling and astonishment, you know, the shock at what was going on. At the revelation of God that was taking place in front of them, right? So, and he writes as follows: Ve'efsha shnichlau bozeh gamelitzas chida hanifla'a shevifi rabo seinu. There's a well-known medrash in Shmos Rabba, which the Ksav HaKabbalah describes as a melitzas chida, a puzzling expression that Chazal have. It's a well-known Chazal, so we'll quote it. The Chazal says that kishenosan HaKadosh Baruch Hu es HaTorah, when God gave the Torah at Har Sinai, tzipor lo tzovach, of lo parach, no bird cried out, no bird flew overhead, shor lo ga'a, no ox brayed, Ofanim lo afu, srafim lo amru kadosh. The malachim in shamayim stopped. They didn't sing praises to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hayom lo nizdazeya. The waves in the sea stopped going back and forth. Habrios lo dibru. People didn't talk. El ha'olam shoseku machrish. The entire world was incredibly quiet and just listening to the revelation of the Torah at Har Sinai. So again, that's Hidmim HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kol HaOlam. In paraphrasing this, the Ksav HaKabbalah writes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu silenced the entire world. V'hishtik ha'elyonim v'atachtonim. And he caused not only things down here on this world to stop, but even in the Olamas ha'elyonim, even the Malachim themselves, you know, stopped flying around and singing Shira, again, whatever that means exactly. But, you know, they stopped in their tracks as well in the heavens. So it's a very picturesque description. But where did Chazal get it from? Right? In other words, so okay, maybe you'll say it's a Kabbalah that they had. In other words, it was so obvious to Chazal that, you know, the giving of the Torah was such an earth-shattering event that obviously the whole world came to a halt in order for that earth-shattering event to take place. But Rav Zaksava Kabbalah, maybe there's a source in our Pasuk for this idea. Vayecherad kol ha'har me'od. Everything around the mountain began to tremble. So what was around the mountain? On one level, the people. But, around is a very loose term. If you start drawing circles around Har Sinai, so in a sense, everything in the world is around the mountain. Not only in this physical world, but even the spiritual world. Everything in the world is sort of, gathered around the mountain in some way or another, with the world at the center, with the Har Sinai at the center of the circle. Vayecherad kol ha'har, that which was around the mountain, i.e. the world, began to tremble and stopped and, was quiet. And says the Aksava Kabbalah, maybe that's the source in the Pasuk for this expression of Chazal in the Medrash, that everything came to a standstill when the Torah was given. Hu anichlau gam kein b'maymer v'yechred kol ahar me'od. That's what's included in the statement. Ha-hekef kulo shemichutz la-ahar. Everything that was around the mountain was in such a state of trembling and shock. From the incredible covet of God that was revealed in the land, and that's where maybe where Chazal got this expression from. Finally, he concludes, once we've established that this word kol can mean that which envelops or that which surrounds, consider the interpretation of the following pasuk in Ma'amar Chazal, which on the surface is a little bit different to understand. In Parsha Shlach, it talks about the karbon which is brought, chisishku v'lo sasu es kol ha-mitzvos ha'ele. When you err and do not perform all of the mitzvos. What does it mean that you err and you don't perform all the mitzvos? So Chazal have a Kabbalah that the Parsha over there in Parsha Shlach, which describes bringing a carbon chatos to atone for quote-unquote having not fulfilled all the mitzvahs, is a carbon which is brought when specifically Avodah Zarah has been violated. It's a carbon chatos on the performance of Avodah Zarah. It says kol ha-mitzvos. So Chazal say, Avodah Zarah shkulo keneged kol ha-mitzvos. It's equal. A person worships Avodah Zarah, so that's equal to violating all of the mitzvahs. Okay, no, Chazal say it, the Torah Shebaal Peh says it, but still you wonder, okay, if it really means Avodah Zarah, it should say Avodah Zarah. Well, why should it say Kol HaMitzvos, which is so confusing? So the Ksava Kabbalah says, based on our interpretation of Kol, it really fits very, very nicely. Because Kol doesn't mean all of the mitzvos. Kol means that which includes or envelops or surrounds the mitzvos. Avodah Zarah, the reason Avodah Zarah is shkula keneged kol ha-mitzvos is because if a person worships Avodah Zarah, he's committing a crime which encompasses kol ha-Torah kula. It amounts to a rejection of the entire Torah. So it's not that it's all the mitzvos, but it's kol ha-mitzvos. It includes, it's kolel. It includes and envelops the entirety of Torah, and therefore it's a perfectly fine expression to refer to Avodah Zarah in that particular fashion. Just want to add one more interesting linguistic interpretation, which the Aksava Kabbalah adds over here. Again, a little before he talked about the word kol, a little bit earlier, and he continues this idea at some length a little bit later. The Aksava Kabbalah asks, what was the nature of the shofar that was blowing at Har Sinai? Right? Again, the Psukim speak about the kol shofar, the sound of the shofar. Rashi writes that it was the shofar that came from the Elo Shel Yitzchak, that came from the ram that was offered up instead of Yitzchak. The Aksava Kabbalah presents a very unique, I think, in a different way of understanding that shofar. And he writes as follows, Hakol Atzmo Nikra Shofar. The shofar doesn't necessarily mean a ram's horn, the way we typically interpret it, especially in light of Rosh Hashanah. Shofar means the voice itself, the voice, the sound of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's voice is referred to as shofar. So, I don't understand. You know, just say, Vayhi HaKol, Holech V'chazak V'chazek Me'od. Why do you have to say shofar if we're not talking about a shofar? We're just talking about the sound of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's voice. So, we find that, we find in Aramaic that something which is very good and fine is referred to as shapir, right? Shapir is the Aramaic for something which is good. And based on that, he says the following. The word shofar itself means something which conveys a sound clearly. It doesn't necessarily have to mean a ram's horn specifically. It's just a shofar. It's that which makes the call shapir, which makes the voice or the sound as good as it can possibly be. Now, typically, if I'm just going to, let's take the example of a ram's horn. If I'm just going to push breath out from my mouth without having a ram's horn, it's not going to sound very powerful. That which makes the breath sound powerful is the ram's horn. So in other words, the instrument itself, which I put up against my lips, is called a shofar because it amplifies or, you know, makes the voice, makes the sound very, very clear. But fundamentally speaking, says the Aksava Kabbalah, it's quite possible if a person or an entity had a very, very loud and clear voice, that could be described as a kol shofar, whether or not a ram's horn was being used in amplifying that voice. And that's what he wants to suggest. What's motivating the Aksava Kabbalah is that the Aksava Kabbalah did his utmost to stay away, to stay very, very far away from any depiction of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that was human-like in any which way. You know, when you talk, if one was to talk about the shofar blowing at Har Sinai in literal terms, we would be asking ourselves a lot of questions. If there was an actual shofar blowing at Har Sinai, so who was blowing that exactly? Was HaKadosh Baruch Hu blowing a shofar? What does it mean for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to blow a shofar? How do we understand that? So to avoid all of those questions, the Aksava Kabbalah says, it's possible to interpret the kol shofar at Har Sinai as not necessarily meaning a ram's horn, but just an incredibly loud manifestation of the voice of HaKadosh Baruch Hu at Har Sinai. That can also be called the kol shofar. Yeah.
All of the entire historical episode of the giving of the Torah seems like a physical manifestation of the event. You know, so in a sense, that comment about the shofar could be said more broadly about the entire episode, the entire, you know, why, I mean, or even so far as, isn't there some midrash or something that says they held Har Sinai above the people? And, What's the nature of the miracle that we needed all these physical, not just a shofar, but other physical manifestations?
Right. No. So the issue is not the physicality of everything. The issue is with the blowing of the shofar. It ascribes. It seems to ascribe human properties to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what Aksava Kabbalah is trying to avoid. Because again, if there was a shofar blowing, who was blowing the shofar? HaKadosh Baruch Hu was blowing the shofar? I mean, he had Malachim blowing the shofar? Like, how did that work exactly? You know, there are many aspects of Har Sinai, of the Maimed Har Sinai and the giving of the Torah, which we wouldn't understand unless we were there. But I think that aspect in particular, the blowing of a shofar, you know, maybe he generated a sound that was like a shofar. But again, the Aksava Kabbalah is suggesting that the term shofar can sometimes refer just to the clarity of the voice itself, the clarity of the sound, not necessarily a ram's horn in the literal sense of the term. Bez Hashem will pick up after Ma'ariv with a discussion that Aksava Kabbalah has about the sequence of events at Maimed Har Sinai, and in doing so, he's going to relate to a portion at the very, very end of Parshas Yisro, which is not immediately clear at which point in the story it actually happened. Okay, Rabbi Chanan ben Akasha. Okay. Right, welcome to the second part of the Shir, Aksava Kabbalah, Parshas Yisro. At the end of the Sedra, right after the Aseres HaDibros, Perek Chav Pasuk Tesvav. So we have the Torah describes as follows: V'chol ha'om ro'im es hakolos v'es alapidim. The entire people saw the thunder and the flames. V'es kol ha'shofar. They heard the sound of the shofar. V'es ha'har ha'shem. They saw that the mountain was smoky. V'yar ha'om v'yonu u'v'yamdu me'rochok. The people saw and they trembled and they stood back. V'yomru el Moshe daber ato imanu v'nishma'a. They said to Moshe, "You speak to us, and we will listen." Let Hashem not speak to us, lest we die. So Moshe said to the people, "Don't be afraid. God is coming to lift you up or to test you." Different ways to translate that. And God is coming in order to ensure that His fear will be on your faces, lest you sin. So the people stood back. And Moshe came close to the cloud where HaKadosh Baruch Hu was. When exactly does this part of the story take place? The people hear everything. They're scared. They're frightened. They say, "You speak to us. Let Hashem not speak to us. We're afraid we're going to die." Okay, Moshe says, "Don't worry." The people still stand back, and he goes into the cloud. At what point during the story exactly does this take place? So writes the Ksava Kabbalah on this pasuk. Kvar hichviach haRamban. The Ramban takes up this question in his commentary on the Chumash. He says the Ramban has already pointed out mimashmo saksuvim, from the implication of the psukim, shein mikros elu medabri mimasha hoya achar matan Torah. Doesn't make sense to say that this is an episode that took place after Matan Torah. In other words, after Matan Torah, the people hear the Aseres HaDibros, they're frightened, they say to Moshe, "You know, we can't deal with this anymore, you just go up in Har Sinai, get the rest of the Torah, bring it down to us." And says Aksava Kabbalah, this is unrelated to that which is described in Parshas Voschanon, where the Torah for the second time in Chumash describes Matan Torah. It's unrelated to what it says over there, that the people came to Moshe Rabbeinu and they said, "We're going to die if we're going to, you know, hear the awesome voice of HaKadosh Baruch Hu." Ki omnam v'chol ha'om ro'im v'yomer ha'mosh ha'yakor Matan Torah. And in fact, says the Ramban, this short paragraph which we just read, although it's conveyed by the Torah after the Aseres HaDibros, in chronological order, it actually happened before the Torah was given. V'haseder b'dvarim kachu. And explains the Ramban, the order of events is as follows. B'bokar hayu kolos ufrakim v'kol shofar. In the morning, there was thunder and lightning and the sound of the shofar. V'oz hayu Yisrael dayim b'makom tachanosam. The people were in the place where they had originally camped. U'moshe chisek levava motzion likraso lakim ha'yisyashu b'sachti sahar. Moshe Rabbeinu strengthened the people's resolve, and he moved them to come close to the foot of the mountain. As they got to the foot of the mountain, the sound of the shofar intensified. And it's at that point where the parasha we just read, the paragraph that follows Matan Torah, took place. The people said, "Whoa, you know, this is really scary. I don't know if we can handle this." And Moshe Rabbeinu again calmed them down and said, "Don't worry." Nonetheless, as much as Moshe Rabbeinu tried to calm them down, they didn't want to come that close. They stood back, right? As we just said a few moments ago. U'Moshe nigash el ho'arofel asher shomo elokim. Moshe comes close to the thick cloud which has descended upon Har Sinai. And then, says the Ramban, v'oz diber elokim hadibros. It was at that point that HaKadosh Baruch Hu revealed the Aseres HaDibros, and Moshe Rabbeinu, and you know, when Moshe Rabbeinu was again in the thick cloud and the people were standing back. So the way the Ramban portrays this paragraph is that the entirety of the paragraph, chronologically, really takes place right before the Aseres HaDibros, as opposed to right after the Aseres HaDibros, which is where the Chumash placed it. Udvarav Nechonim, Sheina Parshim Daberis Masha Hoya Achar Matan Torah. Says Aksava Kabbalah, presumably the Ramban is correct, that it's wrong to state that this Parsha is taking place after Matan Torah. Va'av Sharia Barbanel Ishtadol Istor Divrei Ramban. If you look in the Abarbanel in his commentary on Chumash, he argues with this Ramban, because after all, you know, according to the Ramban, you really have to, you know, basically cut and paste. In other words, you have to take a paragraph from after Aseres HaDibros and stick it before the Aseres HaDibros, at least from a chronological perspective, which again is interesting based on some discussions we've had recently about Ein Mukdam U'Mukhar BaTorah. The Ramban is the great champion of the idea that, generally speaking, the Torah is presented in chronological order. And it's only on rare occasions that we say, Ein Mukdam U'Mukhar BaTorah, that the Torah deviates from the chronological order. Here, the Ramban himself, you know, with all that he's a big champion of that the Torah is usually written in chronological order, here the Ramban concedes that, you know, it would seem that the Torah here is written out of chronological order. And, you know, the Abarbanel challenges the Ramban on that basis, but says the Aksava Kabbalah, he thinks the Ramban, you know, makes sense. But Gam Lishna Dekra Yorek Kapirish HaRamban, okay, explains how the psukim themselves seem to fit in with the Ramban. Omnom Mashikosav Ramban, Shahoyo Inbis Chaskus Kol HaShofar Ma'od, Shekvar Kodem Shenemur Adibros Kvar Nirta Amla Achorov, nonetheless, says the Aksava Kabbalah, that which the Ramban says, that as the people drew closer to Har Sinai the second time, the shofar got louder, and the people really started sweating bullets at that point, and they just said, we can't come any closer. It's very difficult to accept that. Why? Dimkein loma hus har Moshe reid ha'ed ba'am pen yehersu. Halo kvar nevchut sireyam aleim velo otsru koach lis yatsev samuch lugvu velo shomo Moshe vayamdu meirachok. If you go back to Perek Yutes, which describes the events leading up to the revelation at Har Sinai, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu there tells Moshe Rabbeinu, Perek Yutes Pasuk Chof Aleph. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe. Hashem said to Moshe, "Reid ho'ed ba'am. Go and warn the people. Go down and warn the people. Pen yeresu el Hashem liros nofal mimenu rov. Maybe they're gonna come too close to the mountain and they're gonna get struck down." So yes, Aksava Kabbalah. According to the Ramban, why was that necessary to tell Moshe Rabbeinu, to tell the people? Tell the people they should stand back and they shouldn't get too close. Believe you me, the people are not getting any closer. According to the Ramban, they've already expressed the idea that they're scared out of their wits. They don't want to come close to Har Sinai, right? The challenge Moshe Rabbeinu has is not keeping them away. The challenge Moshe Rabbeinu has is bringing them closer. So that pasuk says the Aksava Kabbalah is difficult according to the Ramban's interpretation. Va'od im kol ha'shofar ha'chazok me'od hoya sibal yisrachakusa min agvu v'lam im morachok. The pasuk that we have over here describes the fact that the people became nervous and scared because they saw the kolos, the lapidim, and the shofar. According to the Ramban, the main thing is that they heard the shofar. The shofar became so loud, it was unbearable. They couldn't manage it. The kolos and the lapidim, the thunder and the lightning, that they were experiencing, whether they were close to the mountain or they were far away from the mountain. That doesn't seem to be the main thing over here. So the Aksava Kabbalah himself wants to suggest the following. And the truth is, this interpretation not only works well with the psukim and chumash, but also works particularly well with the well-known medrash from Chazal, which is not immediately apparent in the psukim, but the way that Aksava Kabbalah explains the psukim, you can work the medrash into the psukim as well. Lochein nirali, ki parsha zov chol ha'am roim, midaberes b'ma shahoya b'shas ha'dibros, Achar shenemru shnei dibros rishonos mipi agvura. We know there's a tradition from Chazal that HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself spoke the first two of the Aseres HaDibros in such a way that Klal Yisrael heard, and they were frightened to no end. And sort of in the middle of the Dibros, after the second Dibro, they went to Moshe Rabbeinu, and they said, we can't take it anymore. We don't want to hear it mipi agvura, right? We don't want to hear these awesome emanations coming from HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. Let Hashem tell it to you, and you'll convey it to us. Right? That's the Gemara Darshan's Torah tziva lanu Moshe. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu taught us Torah. Torah is begematria 611. He taught us 611 of the mitzvos. Two of the mitzvos, the first two dibros, we heard from HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. Right? So in other words, there was this break in the middle of the Aseres HaDibros where the people said, this is too much, we can't go on. Where do you find in Chumash a hint to that break? The fact that they interrupted the Aseres HaDibros and said, whoa, this is just unbearable. So that's like Savva Kabbalah wants to suggest, that's what this paragraph is. This paragraph is Klal Yisrael coming to Moshe Rabbeinu after the first two Dibros. V'chol ha'am ro'im es ha'kolos v'es ha'lapidim. Vayomru el Moshe, and they say to Moshe Rabbeinu, Daber ato imanu v'nishma'a. We can't take this. You talk to us. Let HaKadosh Baruch Hu talk to you, and then you'll convey the mitzvos and the dibros to us. Vayedaber imanu elokim penamus. Let Hashem not speak to us directly, like he did for the first two dibros, because we're going to die. We can't absorb the awesomeness of this experience. And he says, "Va'oz nigash Moshe el ha'arafel, la'shmiam shmona dibros achronos." So Moshe Rabbeinu says, "Okay, if that's what you want." Va'yamdu ha'omer rachok. The people step back. Moshe goes into the cloud, and then he conveys to them the last eight dibros, and you know that's what this paragraph is meant to convey. The one of the milas, I think, of this interpretation is that it deals with the placement of this paragraph in the Chumash itself. Meaning, according to the Ramban, you have this problem that, you know, the paragraph which really is chronologically happened before Matan Torah is conveyed by the Torah after Matan Torah. It's conveyed by the Torah after the Aseres HaDibros. And you have to ask the Kasha, so why would the Torah go out of order in conveying this? On the other hand, you know, the point the Ramban makes that, you know, that this paragraph does not seem to be describing events that took place after Matan Torah, also seems to be a valid point. So how do you reconcile those two things? So says the Ksav HaKabbalah, the paragraph really takes place in the middle of the Aseres HaDibros. Chronologically, after the second Dibra, the people came to Moshe Rabbeinu as per Chazal, and they said, we can't deal with this. You know, Daber ato imanu v'nishma'a, you talk to us directly. But we understand why the Torah wouldn't have interrupted the Aseres HaDibros to give us this paragraph, because clearly, even though chronologically that would be a correct presentation, thematically it would be terrible. I think we can all appreciate that it would be very, very disturbing if the Aseres HaDibros were presented by the Torah with a break in the middle. The people came to Moshe Rabbeinu and said, whoa, we got to stop. You know, you just presented to us. So what's the most logical place to present the paragraph that describes Klal Yisrael going to Moshe Rabbeinu and saying, you speak to us, not HaKadosh Baruch Hu directly? The most logical place is right after the Aseres HaDibros end, almost like a postscript. By the way, in the middle of the Aseres HaDibros, you know, they interrupted in order to ask Moshe Rabbeinu to carry on. So it comes out that this tradition that Chazal have, that the first two Dibros came from HaKadosh Baruch Hu directly, is actually rooted in the Psukim. Again, true to what the Ksav HaKabbalah always tries to do, to relate the Ksav, the Psukim, the Torah Shebiksav, to the Kabbalah, to the Torah Shebaal Peh. It's not merely an oral tradition, not to make light of an oral tradition, but it's an oral tradition which is rooted in the Psukim themselves. The Psukim themselves describe this phenomena, how the people asked for a reprieve after the first two of the Dibros. Yeah.
After the incident of
weren't they scared enough?
Yeah, I mean, but apparently, again, the awesomeness of God's revelation at Maamad Har Sinai was just of such a level that they, you know, they couldn't deal with it. You know, it was even more than what they'd experienced at Yam Suf. Well, the Ramban says that it's different. As the Ramban says that in Voeschanon, that's indeed after Matan Torah. The Ramban says that what's conveyed in Voeschanon is actually after Matan Torah. In other words, the people say to Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, the rest of the Torah has to be something that comes, you know, from you, not from HaKadosh Baruch Hu directly. You know, we need a middleman, you know, to deal with that. But the Ramban identifies that as being different from what's being described over here. And the Ksava Kabbalah wants to say sort of a middle pshat, that what's being described over here is right in the middle of the Aseres HaDibros. And Voschanan, I believe he would still maintain, like the Ramban, that that's post-Matan Torah. Okay, Be'ez Hashem, next week we'll